The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
Good afternoon, Bay Area. This is Attorney Bob Bergman broadcasting warm and dry from my office in the Cambrian Park neighborhood of San Jose. Had kind of a little bit of a scare this morning. Starting yesterday afternoon, the power to my building went out. I know many of you out there probably experienced power loss over this tremendous storm that we had come through and hit us, and we're still on the tail end of here in the Bay Area. The power went out in my office. My home lost internet. And when I came in this morning to my office, the power was still off. So there was a chance that I wasn't going to be broadcasting today, but fortunately, the power to my building here came back on about 9:30 this morning, so I'm able to talk with you now live on the air. To everyone around the Bay Area, I hope that everyone is safe. I know there have been a lot of flooding here in the Bay Area. We've had flooding here in San Jose, and I know that that is certainly near the Guadalupe River. The banks, my understanding is the banks basically overflowed and flooded some areas, maybe some neighborhoods. So I hope everybody is safe. Nobody was injured. And if there's any losses, it's just property loss, not loss of life. This has been really a crazy storm here. And it's been slamming, especially Southern California. So those of you who have families and friends in Southern California, I hope that they're all right and everybody's safe and sound, because it's been a really, 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 really crazy few days. Well, I thought I would use my show today, since it's basically the first show of February 2024, to just talk about a number of different topics. I thought I would maybe go into a little more depth about my practice as an attorney, what I do as an estate planning attorney, and how it's different from a trust lawyer. Because you might say, well, Bob, wait a minute. You're an estate planning attorney. You do trusts, right? I go, that's correct. So trusts are part of what you do as an estate planning attorney. I go, yes, that's correct. Is that the only thing you do as an estate planning attorney? And it's like, no. It's not the only thing I do as an estate planning attorney. It is just one of the things I do as an estate planning attorney. So let me explain the difference between an estate planning attorney and a trust lawyer. Let me start first by saying a trust lawyer is any lawyer that offers living trusts as part of his or her practice. To let you know, unlike many professions, in the practice of law, you don't have to have any specific training or experience in an area of law practice to hold yourself out as doing that area of law practice. So this literally means that someone coming straight out of law school, fresh off of passing the bar, can say that they do anything in the area of law that they choose to advertise and hold themselves out to do. Now, one of the realities is that in order to say you're a trust attorney or a trust lawyer, all you have to do is say that's what you do and advertise that's what you do. You don't have to have any special training. You don't have to have any special expertise of any kind. You don't have to have studied the area of estate planning. The likelihood is that you probably went to a couple of seminars put on by Continuing Education of the Bar, which is the education arm of the State Bar of California, done through CEB, Continuing Education of the Bar. And you probably took a couple of courses on how to add living trusts to your law practice so that you can do living trusts in addition to the other 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 other practice area things that you do. Like, I've seen attorneys that do family law and living trusts, attorneys that do bankruptcy law and living trusts, personal injury and living trusts, and family law and bankruptcy. When you see an attorney that is doing several different legal practice areas at the same time, the chances are good that that attorney is a general practitioner, similar to a general practice doctor, or what they nowadays call, like in the medical system, they call internal medicine doctors. So your GP, general practice doctor, is there to meet with and maybe prescribe certain medications and things for common ailments. But a general practice doctor, when presented with a situation such as an apparent melanoma on your skin, or something wrong with your feet, or something wrong with your joints, things like that, the general practice doctor typically will and should refer you to a specialist physician that specializes in whatever is the issue that appears to be going on with you medically. Now, a lot of GPs, general practice doctors, are excellent at what they do. And they're even excellent at diagnosing a lot of medical conditions. But whether or not they should be treating you for those medical conditions is a completely separate issue. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with my GP saying, well, looks like you have a melanoma, but that's okay. I can treat that for you. My response would be, shouldn't you be referring me to a dermatologist or an oncologist to do an actual diagnosis and then prescribe whatever treatment would be for that because it's a form of cancer? And if the doctor said, oh, no, no big problem, I can take care of that, I would probably find a new doctor right away. Because, I don't know about you, if I have a medical condition that is more than just a common cold or an upset stomach or something, which could even be something much more serious than just an upset stomach, I would want to make sure that I'm referred to a specialist. That's what happened when I had to have knee surgery to remove a torn meniscus in my knee. That's what happened when I had... I have neuropathy in my feet. I was referred to basically a neuro specialist right there to determine what was going on. So the same thing kind of applies in the practice of law, and a trust attorney probably is not really a specialist of any kind in the area of estate planning. And I'm an estate planning attorney, and when we come back after the break, I'm going to explain in detail just what that means. So this is estate planning attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and I'll pick this up again after the first break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose estate planning attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the second segment of our show today. In the first segment, I explained to some extent what a trust lawyer is and how I'm not a trust lawyer, even though I do prepare trusts of various kinds as part of my practice. I am an estate planning attorney, and let me explain what that means. Estate planning is a legal practice area. It's a very broad legal practice area, and those who are serious about estate planning go through the time and effort and study and even testing to become board-certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the State Bar Board of Legal Specialization. Now, what does that actually mean? To become a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, it involves being in practice for a long time. It involves doing various types of legal work extensively in a number of different sub-areas of estate planning. It involves taking a difficult specialization exam that is solely in the practice area where you want to become a specialist. Now, unlike the state bar, the bar exam, which is testing you across a number of different practice areas, kind of a little bit about several different areas. The specialization exam is testing you in depth about the area of estate planning. You're tested on your knowledge, or at least your ability to locate answers in the probate code of the state of California, which is where estate planning attorneys live. It's the primary code that we refer to. Certified specialists in estate planning. In my case, I emphasize in my practice foundational estate planning, which is drafting revocable living trusts and all of the additional legal documents that make up a comprehensive estate plan. Those include a certification of trust, which gives information to financial institutions about who set up the trust, who's in charge of the trust, and maybe some of the powers that the person in charge of the trust, called the trustee, actually has in reference to the trust. There is a pour-over will, a special type of will that specifically says, hey, if something happens to me and I have property in my name when I die or payable to my estate when I die, then I want that to be turned over to the ownership of my trust and not have my will be used to distribute the property to anyone directly. A pour-over will, unless there is other written evidence of intent, a pour-over will would have to be filed in the probate court and go through the entire probate process to get that loose property turned over to the trust. However, when you have a well-drafted estate plan from a specialist estate planning attorney, such as me, you'll actually have other documentation in your estate plan that gives the ability for a court to declare that that property is, in fact, property of the trust without going through the whole probate process. And that's very important because sometimes you need access to property quickly after someone dies. I had a situation where literally the only cash available to the trustee was in accounts that were in the person's individual name when they died. So we actually went to court on an urgent ex parte basis, ex parte meaning no formal hearing date, and I managed to get a court order in a few days so that the trustee could go and take over those accounts and get access to funds to actually pay the bills, because there were bills, ongoing bills and existing bills that had to be paid. Even there wasn't even money to bury the person until we got access to those funds. Another thing would be a general assignment of assets, which I always put in the estate plans because it covers various categories of property that someone may own that maybe for whatever reason didn't get titled into the name of their trust, but by identifying categories of assets in an assignment, we provide written evidence of intention, which can be used to support a court petition to get those assets into the trust. That's the Hegstedt petition that I've talked about over the years. Another thing, if someone's married, we probably have a marital property agreement where assets are characterized mainly to make sure that we have things characterized as community property, if in fact they are intended to be community property, and also to have characterization of any assets that are separate property of one or the other spouse in the marriage. There's going to be a durable power of attorney for finances, an important legal document that is intended to make sure that people have access to and the ability to control any assets not owned by the trust, such as retirement plans or individual brokerage or bank accounts that are in the person's individual name, and also to be able to file tax returns for somebody, to deal with the IRS, Franchise Tax Board, Medicare, Medi-Cal, the DMV, the Veterans Administration, all of those alphabet agencies that that we have in our lives, both state and federal, and sometimes city and county as well. And that includes filing tax returns for somebody. There's going to be an advance health care directive, so someone has instructions for their health care and who's going to be in charge of making those decisions for them if they can't. Closely related is the HIPAA authorization, which is a medical privacy form, indicating who is authorized to find out medical information about somebody, not necessarily making decisions for them, but find out what's going on with them. So a comprehensive estate plan should be well thought out, well researched, extremely well drafted, and intended to avoid conservatorship and probate and avoid having to probate an estate after someone dies. That's what I do as an estate planning attorney. I'm not a trust lawyer. I'm an estate planning attorney specialist. Okay, we'll talk with you after the mid-show break. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, and see you on the other side.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman.
on AM 1220 KDOW.
Hi, welcome back to the third segment of the show today. I'm going to switch gears, and I'm going to share with you some questions and comments that have come from around the state of California. Some of them I think might be of interest to you out there, so let's dive in and see what we got here. Out of Ventura, California. Okay. It says, a pour-over will has been presented for a trust that was never funded in California. Let me explain what funded means. Funding a trust is the action taken to actually transfer the ownership of an asset into the ownership of the trust. It's what we call funding or trust funding. So in this case, there's a pour-over will. I explained earlier what a pour-over will is. It says the will names a trust, but it's not exactly the same name as the trust document that has been presented. The will reads that the Smith Revocable Trust is to be funded. The trust document reads the Smith Revocable Trust. It's just an extra the in the title of the trust. First of all, that's a really, really stupid way to draft the trust agreement. It's like calling a restaurant the Il Ristorante. That would mean the restaurant. With the two different titles affect the pour-over will? But, okay. Will the trust be able to be funded? Well, I think, yeah, clearly it's the same trust. Normally, a pour-over will would identify more than just the name of the trust. It would also give the date the trust was created. And clearly, if they're the same Smith Revocable Trust with the same creation date, it's clearly intended to be the same trust. An extra the doesn't somehow make it somehow different. It didn't say the Jones Revocable Trust when the only trust that exists is the Smith Revocable Trust. So I don't see that really as an issue. Now, here's one that I think the person might be surprised to hear. It says, father died, had a trust, and there are liquid assets in the trust. Can I proceed to distribute the remaining liquid assets to me? It says, my sister was executor of my father's will and primary trustee. She distributed my 50% share to me and suddenly passed and did not distribute the balance to herself. We are the only adult children named. The will and the trust only names us as issue as beneficiaries, but neither of us have children, only spouses. Well, I'll tell you what. If dad died and left 50% to the sister, that is what we call a vested interest. That means the sister is entitled to receive that 50%. That's unless the trust required that she had to survive for a certain number of days after the father died. Let's assume that's not the case. If that's the case, the sister's interest in 50% vested when the father died. And the fact that she hadn't actually distributed it out to herself doesn't change the fact that she was entitled to it. And I look at this as an estate planning attorney, and I say the 50% interest is now payable to the sister's estate, meaning probate estate. And I think that if the sister had a will, it might say, I leave everything to my spouse. If the sister had no will, but there are no children, but the sister was married, then under what we call the laws of intestate succession, which is basically fancy legal words for who gets your stuff when you die if you don't have a plan. Under the laws of intestate succession, the sister's share will end up going to the sister's spouse because the spouse is the intestate heir of somebody if they don't have children. Since here there's no issue, meaning no children, that means the sister's share has to eventually make its way to the sister's spouse. It's up to the sister's spouse to actually take legal action to receive that 50% share, either by filing a petition for probate of the deceased sister's estate, or perhaps a spousal property petition if the sister left a will leaving everything to the spouse. But that's some kind of court action is going to be necessary to get that to the sister. I mean, to the sister's spouse. Okay, this is an interesting one out of Elk Grove, California. Person said, what form do I use to notify the county recorder that the property owner has died? It says here, the property was held in a revocable trust. 3 years ago, I was made trustee of the trust, and that fact was recorded with the county. So yes, while my father was listed as the grantor or owner, he was not the legal trustee at time of death, but the county keeps saying I have to do an affidavit of death of trustee. If, in fact, this person who's asking the question was put on the title of the property as trustee of the trust, they would give a notification of death of real property owner to the county, and they could then transfer the title of the property to whoever it's supposed to go to now that the father's died. So I'm not sure why the county would be asking them to do an affidavit of death of trustee if the father was no longer the trustee at the time of his death. That actually doesn't make any sense. I think a notification of death of real property owner would be appropriate. And that's the only thing I could think of that really would be appropriate. Okay, can a beneficiary of a trust list the property in the trust in their own will? This is out of San Jose. So let's say Trust A or House A is in a trust. The settlors of the trust, my parents, both died, and the beneficiary, me in this case, has full rights to House A as listed in their trust. House A is paid off and is being used as a rental property, providing passive income monthly. I want my children to get the rights of the house when I pass away. Question, am I allowed to put in my will that my children can get full ownership of House A, even though it's in a trust in the name of my parents as the original settlors? How do I ensure that House A gets passed down to them, my kids? First thing I would ask this person is, have you taken action to take over as the trustee of the trust, and have you notified the county, Santa Clara County in this case, that the last parent has passed away through a notification of death of real property owner? Or have you just kind of continued on collecting rent and you still have it in the trust because you haven't done anything yet? That's not a good idea. It sounds like it's a rental property. That means if the last parent passed away recently, in the last couple of years, the property taxes are due to be reassessed 100%. And that's something that's Proposition 19. By the way, today is the deadline to go to the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and download their petition to repeal Proposition 19. You have to download it, follow the instructions, fill it out, and then make sure you follow the instructions and then get it postmarked today in order to get it in time. Here's an issue right here with this property. It's probably going to be reassessed under Proposition 19. If you leave it in the parents' trust, then you just name it in your will, you're going to create problems for the children because they'll have to first figure out how to get it out of the trust and then get it into your estate so it can pass on to them. I think the better thing is do the right thing, notify the county, clear the title, get it into your name, set up your own trust, and then transfer the title of the property into your trust so that it can be passed on to your children. Now, that would be my approach and what I would recommend, because not informing the county that the last parent had died will mean eventually to make it to your children, and that's when they'll find out that your parent died maybe 10 years ago, and it was under Prop 19, and they'll go back and reassess the property taxes and then carry forward the reassessed value for several years, plus penalties and interest, and all of a sudden there may be tens of thousands of dollars of property tax owing by your children. Okay, we'll come back after the third break to finish out the show. This is attorney Bob Bergman.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Hi, welcome back to the final segment of our show today. I'm going to finish up the show with a handful more of questions and comments from around the state of California. And this is one out of Los Angeles that's kind of interesting. It suggests there's maybe a fundamental lack of understanding about how certain things work. Says, if my wife is added onto the deed, how soon can she refinance the property to remove the original vested party from the deed? Says, my mom wants to get added onto the deed of her grandmother's home to eventually refinance the property and buy out her grandmother from the equity of her home and take her off the deed. Is this possible in Los Angeles County? Well, yes. Is there a waiting period from when my wife gets added onto the deed? No. To when she can refinance and assume a mortgage on the property? Well, first of all, she can't just refinance without grandma's consent if grandma is on the title. Really, what she's saying is she wants to be able to buy grandma out and assume the loan. Grandma can put her on the title, and then they can get a new loan, and then grandma can get off of the title. There's ways to do this, but in any event, I can tell you right now, the wife going on the property at this point of grandma's home and then buying her out, that's going to likely trigger a 100% reassessment of the property taxes. So be very careful about doing something like this. You might end up with a result that was not anticipated because Proposition 19 would come in. Because here it's grandma. Grandma, if it's grandma's residence and the wife is the granddaughter and is going to be living there, and grandpa is deceased, and actually the wife's parents are both deceased, then they may qualify to reduce some of the reassessment under Proposition 19 with a grandparent to grandchild transfer. But you got to be very careful with things like this, because it's very easy to trigger reassessment without even intending to do so. Okay. My parents divorced around 1980. In the settlement, it was said the house was to be sold and proceeds split. My parents never sold the house, and my mom died in 2003. The house is now in my father's name. Well, yeah, because the mother died. They still own the house together. I don't know how it ended up in the father's name unless it was joint tenants with his now deceased former spouse. But the person said that's the only way it could have really ended up that way. And there's a reverse mortgage. So the father went and got a reverse mortgage on the property. I just learned my father signed a transfer on death deed to his girlfriend. Do I have any recourse with regard to my mother's share that she never received? Well, it said the mother died 20 years ago, almost 21 years ago. It's too late to do anything about anything. The time to do it would have been for your mother to force the property to be sold. There's really no way to enforce the settlement today that I'm aware of. You might want to consult with a family lawyer and see if there's any claim that could be made. But if the property was owned as joint tenants, that's probably not going to be successful either. So this is kind of a classic situation of what we call the doctrine of latches. And the doctrine of latches, I don't mean like latches like a latch on a door. Latches, L-A-C-H-E-S, no T in there. And it basically says if you have legal rights of some time and you don't exercise those rights or try to force those rights, after a certain amount of time goes by, you've given up those rights because you didn't do anything about them. And it would be considered unfair to someone else who then acted later on if you came back and said, well, wait a minute, you know, I have these rights. It's like, yeah, but you should have exercised your rights years ago. It's too late now. You're kind of done. Any statute of limitations to compel the sale of the property, that expired a couple of decades ago, maybe more than a couple of decades ago. So I think probably you're done. And there's really nothing left that could be done at that point. Okay, so we got about a minute left with the show today. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you consider going to my website at lawbob, lawbob.com. You can book a consultation with me if you want to talk for a meeting, just talk about estate planning or court trust petitions or probate and estate administration. You can also go through and register for one of my on-demand webinars that will give you a lot of information about what I do as an estate planning attorney. So I hope you've enjoyed the show today. And until next Monday, this is your host, estate planning specialist attorney, Bob Bergman, Plan Your Estate Radio. Let's have a great week and let's be safe driving out there.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.